Happy Friday. Thanks for joining us for Take Two. In the house today, Mara Carabello and Greg Hughes, ready to talk another boring week in Utah politics. And I can't believe that January is done already. We're right to February in a couple days.
I think it's 50 degrees out there right now. So yeah. It's a nice January day.
Winter's over.
I'm so into global warming. I just love it. I just want more heat.
Okay, I love the heat. Too. So I actually have my Christmas tree up. I'm still admitting this. I know. Ooh. I usually leave it up because I put it up late, but I don't like winter, and it's usually miserable, and it makes me feel cozy through January. I haven't really needed it, and now I got to take it down, and I keep looking at it. But since it's almost February, I should really get on that.
Yeah, you don't want to
start falling
day.
Off by now.
No, so. I know. The rest of Christmas is put away, so there you know. My dirty, dark secret, although it's not a dirty secret. No. I accidentally posted a picture the other day where you could see my Christmas tree in the background, and people were not happy with
it. No, there's a strict rule in the Hughes home. We got to get that tree down. I like to keep it up through New Year's, but
after that,
my wife feels otherwise.
I have a neighbor who I can see it in the window. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to stop and knock and say, we're done.
Take it down.
Hey, get over it. Get over it. Tis not the season.
Bad neighbor. It's over. And now we're just talking business. The Utah legislature rocking and rolling with some good bills, some bills where you wonder why they're trying to work on them. So we want to talk about a few of them. One of them is the stalking bill. This one's gotten a lot of talk out there. The idea here behind this is that maybe people are making complaints for someone who's not truly stalking. It's not really a crime. And so it has to be multiple attempts at stalking before it's considered as such. Mara, you like this? You hate this?
This bill has all the markings of a horrible bill. So I want to talk about the two parts that just don't work for me. First, let's just go with process. Any bill in Utah, of which there are many, that start with, I have a neighbor who, or worse, I have a cousin who. This has no validity statistically. This is from an independent, sort of very boutique, single incident. And so that's great if that raises the issue, but we just did a cursory search of other states to see. So just from a process point of view, I don't think there's any case that it's systemic or that it needs any changes. But let's move to what the bill says. You know, I think the best kind of bills in my mind are preventative bills, not punitive bills. And this strictly moves stalking to punitive measures and takes away the preventative nature. And it also does something that I really think is the most harmful, in which it tips the scales of justice to the potential perpetrator side and away from the potential victim side. And it really gives more room on the perpetrator side. And that's just not the basic course of justice. So one, I don't think they've made a case that it's needed and systemic and statewide. Two, I think it's a big change. I disagree with my good friend Sim Gill. He said yesterday that it's implied already and this just codifies it. And I'm like, man, the difference between implied law and codified law is a big difference. So I respectfully disagree with Sim Gill there. No case and tips
like
the scale.
I like that when you Democrats disagree. It's awesome.
I know.
It's
interesting.
But I'll tell you, this really favors a potential perpetrator and ignores all the science around this. It ignores the dynamic. It really, what it does, it's taking it from behavior, right? I had to tell you that this person, I've seen him a few times in unusual places, and I felt threatened. It moves it from there to saying I have to be able to identify his intent, which is such a high bar and really weighs heavily against the potential, I say, victim.
Well, first off, I'd point out that those that are public servants, when they have a constituent that comes to them with an issue, they don't ask, is this peer reviewed? Where is your data?
No,
this
that
is
would be the legislator's job.
I would argue otherwise. I think that you represent a community and a constituency, and when they bring issues to you, and I've done this on other issues, but issues that came up that you can see, that the theory being, Mara, that we're not lucky enough to see the silver bullet fly by, that the only time you've ever seen something go wrong or the circumstance you're being described, this is the only time it's ever happened. It gets to the point where you think it happens enough that when the feedback starts coming back to the lawmaker, that you ought to stare at this. You ought to look at this and address it. So
a single anecdote, though.
I don't accept that it is just because it hasn't been peer reviewed or researched or anything like that. I think you're seeing those relationships with constituents a little more fluid than that. Second, I'd say, we do live in a climate where, in Me Too and other things, where people can make accusations, and we are starting to feel like it's a guilty till proven innocent climate that we live in sometimes. I think if Simgill's saying that this is implied and we're going to codify it, what he's really saying is we don't really do anything until we understand the intent anyway. So if we can codify that and make it clear and have a clear law instead of implied, I think that helps everyone.
If we were resting on the judgment of the one DA for the state that is the Democrats, I'd say good on you. I trust Sim. Yeah. But we're not. We're making a state law. And I believe Greg Hughes just put on his big government shirt said, yeah, if somebody's got a problem, let's whip up a bill about it. That sounds great.
No, I do think that we can define that a little more clearly. And I do think that we have to be careful about the day and age we're in right now. I do think that we're seeing society is inclined to think of people guilty upon an accusation.
This is a shallow, patronistic bill. There is no version of the world in which women are more protected than men. And let's be honest, we can use gender here. We can use gender here because most stalkers are men.
I knew exactly where you were going.
I was a stalker once. This bill makes me feel really uncomfortable because I'm like, I don't know if they should pass it or not and if it's retroactive, because when I was in college and my husband broke up with me, he took another girl to a dance, which I thought he did, but no one posted on social media because that didn't exist. So I went and sat on a hill outside the area where the dance was
So you're a self-professed stalker.
I did, and I've been thinking about that this week, and I'm like, man, I'm a psycho.
No, you're not. No, that's called
relationships. One more incident, Heidi, and we're calling it in.
You are making the case, Heidi, that we just would not want to criminalize what ultimately became your marriage, but you had a relationship, right?
I was
going to
say it was just once, but I may have stalked him outside of another class another time.
Okay, stop now. Stop now.
We're turning away from
much information.
Okay, let's talk about another bill. Well, actually, I want to talk about the fact that we're in person again, which I think is a good move where people are allowed on the Capitol grounds. I think it's difficult to be doing everything online. I know some people still are, but we were talking before this podcast started that sometimes interactions don't work online. You need to be face-to-face. You need to see people's faces. You need to understand. We need the community to be able to come and talk. Does this matter?
Yeah, I mean, this is an impossible situation right now. I mean, we've talked a lot about how much truly good government during the 45 days happens in the hallways. It's actually not backroom deals. It's all people who care from all walks of life at one place and one time, and losing that fluidity and a member of the House being able to walk out and talk to a disparate group at one time and say, are you okay with this? Are you okay with this? And get consensus. I think what I hope from our lawmakers is they're going to scale back some decision-making because of the awkwardness. Greg's been up there more than I, but it is weird still. I mean, it's by appointment. It doesn't have the gathering.
So how does this work, Greg? Because you're a former Speaker of the House, now just a gentleman of
Citizen
leisure.
Hughes, yep.
Citizen Hughes. Why do you go up there? What are you working on? What's in your heart that you're pushing for?
So I was invited to the dance. I served as Speaker of the House. I was a House member for 16 years, and then ran for governor. And enough times passed.
I remember that.
It's not too soon now, so I can mention it without, being upset. No, it's but some of those that I worked with, some of the issues that I cared about, the Sheriff's Association, I'm working with them, helping on some issues that they're staring at, and the Inland Port. Inland Port's an issue that I care deeply about, that I am fortunate to be able to meet with my colleagues and talk about that. So that has led me to some discussions. I don't see myself as a traditional lobbyist, but I have been up to the Capitol, and I will tell you that it is a very, very different and more arduous process getting up there now. I used to have a way to park in the Capitol and get in. But worse than that, when you come in, they have to check your bag. You got to have your mask on.
You have to leave
your
gun in the car.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that part. They probably celebrate if you had your gun. No, I don't know. But they have the troopers at the doors, and there's a scrutiny going in, and then They're very strict about the masks, and so if you're not used to wearing a mask all the time, and including meetings, it can get a little claustrophobic. But that said, so I'm actually, if I were Speaker of the House, I imagine right now, I thought, how would I even operate in this situation? Because as Mara pointed out, I'm telling you, good information drives good decisions, and there are times that a bill sponsors walk into a committee hearing, stakeholders on the issue that is about to be discussed in the bill, they are there meeting with this bill sponsor saying, last second, are there some amendments you'd consider? And if you have the other stakeholders there, can you huddle very quickly and get some agreement going before you have that bill presentation? That happens in committees or outside committee hearings. That happens off the floor. That is part of this, you know, this flow of information that you see in such a short, you know, 7.5 week general session. That isn't going on right now. These are empty hallways. This is, you know, you only have a few, there are only a few seats that are very far apart from one another in the hearing room. And then most of that conversation or that participation is online. And then you get into the whole, hey, is your button muted or not? And all that fun stories that can happen.
So, you know, so. Two interesting things are going on at once, I think, though, that'll be interesting to see if it makes a difference in the future. I think one could argue, I've heard a couple of politicos argue that this is the most transparent session because we've upped the ante on any citizen from their room, from their living room, can watch committee hearings. You can see people. You can see transcripts. We've really upped the technology. So a case can be made that you can see and experience and more. At the same time, I think insiders are having a leg up, not because it's nefarious, but because they already had contact information and they already had relationships, and it's incumbent on them to reach out and talk about what they want. So one thing that I think is fascinating is you could make the argument that this is more open to the public than ever. You could also make the argument that this is a consummate insider session as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting
to see how it shakes out.
So there was always, you could always listen in, live stream the committee hearings. That's always been the case. Yeah. It's been a long time. I mean, Utah really let out as
a state. You couldn't see, you could only listen.
You could only listen, but then you could watch or see the floor debates on the House and Senate floor. They've upped that. So now you can watch and see the committee hearings instead of just listen. So that's been increased. But what I think is happening is people are in the mindset more to connect online than they were even when those opportunities were available before. So I think more people are taking advantage of it. That is good, but you are there. The diversity of thought, the conversations, the ability to back and forth in real time and sometimes spontaneously on issues, you got to get that part back. This we better be in a temporary state. You wouldn't want your sessions to operate like this in a normal course. This, I don't think the people are being served with the limited public access to the process in live and in person. I think that's you can't overstate how important that part is.
I want Greg's take on this. Your friend Jim DeBacchus, you may recall, asked people to swap parties in the election and make sure that you did not win. There's actually a bill up there to stop people from party swapping, or if you do party swap, that you have to do it a significant amount. Was it?
Are they talking elections
before?
There? That sounds kind of risque, this whole party swap.
No, this isn't like wife swapping, okay, swinging, right. No.
It
party
just
swapping.
Kind of weird. I don't
yes.
know.
So is this an idea that's a good idea? Should we let people change parties if they want to be involved in the system? Where should this be?
I was living this. I lived this in real time. Yeah. There was the former co-host who, you know,
Jim DeBacchus,
abruptly
we remember him.
Just resigned
we
last
name.
Week. Who abruptly resigned last week from his duties here at the podcast. But no, he had a very strong campaign amongst Democrats, and it was if you don't switch from being a Democrat to a Republican and vote in this election, we will wake up to a Governor Greg Hughes like we woke up to a President Trump.
Nightmare, right?
And I told Jim, you know, I can hear you when you say that. That's kind of rude. But you did see. You saw a lot of people switch party affiliation. I don't know that there was a conversion of party platform that they all of a sudden woke up and decided, you know what, I do affiliate as a Republican, and I would like to be a Republican. I think there was a different motive going on there. But here's the other interesting statistic. You do not have to register as a Democrat to participate in the Democrat primary.
It's called an open
system. Yeah. So, the reason I point that out is that unaffiliated voters, because it's not required to affiliate specifically as a Democrat, could easily be unaffiliated but still be a Democrat. So when you see people, but in the Republican primary, you have to be a registered Republican. So when you saw
which is annoying.
I like it actually. But if you see this large migration of unaffiliated voters, you would assume wrong if you would think there aren't rock ribbed Democrats within the unaffiliated group. So it's not just those that were registered Democrats who switched over, but there were many, many left of center, those that wouldn't otherwise imagine themselves or affiliate as a Republican, who switched just for that election. So I wouldn't say you're not allowed to change. I mean, you got to have the ability to affiliate with a party. I just think it becomes more opportunistic the closer you're coming to an election and you know who candidates are and you think your Democrat might be too weak, so let's all get into this party and try to influence the outcome
of
a party nomination.
I feel like you and your people like citing chapter and verse. So I'm going to start
there.
Oh,
gee, here we go.
The great constitution of the great state of Utah, Article 1, Section 2, says what? All political power.
This is not a game show. You cannot quiz me.
All political power is inherent to the people. This bill would like to substitute the people as the most important part of the election process and insert parties, which, by the way, aren't subsidiary constructs of the government. They're, in fact, private entities. So who has the inherent political power in the electoral system by constitution? And you know, we love a constitutional right here. And I'm telling
so
you that...
so much sarcasm that in that time.
I know. And so I'm just telling you that right now. Political power is inherent to the people. And this bill wants to make parties more important than the people's right to vote. And I will tell you something else I believe strongly about the party system. There's no litmus test to get in, so you don't even know who your Democrats or Republicans are, really. There's
no ideological
test. No, I've
seen those Democrats. They're crazy. No, I've seen them. I know there's a litmus test. You have a litmus test. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but there's some club.
Don't make me show you video footage from January 6th about crazy. So you know,
Antifa started that.
There is no threshold for joining parties. And so to say that they supersede the right of an individual voter to make any individual choice that they want to. Now, the parties, as you pointed out, can control who they let in or not. And I love that the Republican Party has chosen to take hostages to their party opposed to being persuasive.
Please.
So they're like, once you get in, man, you can't get out. And that's because you love our
brand. It is not a
Hotel
California.
So
it is not. No.
I say a successful party is a persuasive party. I want to join you. You laid out an agenda that, God bless America, I want to join it. But the Republican Party here wants to force you in and never let you out.
So
this takes away the power and the authority of the individual voter to do what they want. Some people call it voter suppression when you take away those powers. But what it wants to do is say, oh, let's defer to the party system instead of the right of the individual voter.
Okay, so I don't know how to unwind everything you just said because there's like 80 points
so
I want to make. Oh, my
so
gosh.
Many
but let
words.
Me just say this. It is a strange mindset in Utah, and I find it unique to our state that people do equate, as you just did, the right to vote, the people's voice, with a political party's nominating process. They conjoin this. They think it's the same exact thing.
Who
when
conflated
it's not.
This as a fine representative
no, 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 no.
who wants to codify
no,
it?
Here's the issue. When I turned 18, I did not live in Utah. I lived in Pennsylvania. And I went to the clerk and I needed to register to vote. And it was a very clear instructions that were given to me. It was this. If you would like, so you can register to vote, and by registering, you can vote in November. If you affiliate with a party, a Democrat party or Republican party, and you would like to help choose the nominee that will be on the November ballot, then you can, at the same time that you're registering to vote, you can also affiliate with a political party.
Right.
But the political party and that affiliation was never confused with the November right to vote.
That's right.
So what I'm saying is, it is not suppressing the people. It is not forcing people or hindering their ability to vote, because that register to vote and to vote is different than a party's process to nominate its candidate.
But your logic stream goes against this.
It is important, but you got to be intellectually honest about this. You can affiliate. It's not like you're forced to affiliate with a party, but when you do, you want that to be have that process to have integrity.
I'm going
to
follow your line of reasoning because I agree with it.
You want the process to have integrity.
The state and the clerk system controls the voting. The parties control their own process to nomination, and that was proven out in two court cases with Count My Vote. We have recent Brutus on this, right? But your logic stream says, okay, so this bill that instructs the voter about their party affiliation makes sense. No, separate the party affiliation. If you Republicans only want to let in left-handed men between the ages of whatever and whatever, I'm for that.
You did
but
this by state.
Leave
when you,
this alone you, on the ballot.
You like Count My Vote. You did this very thing when you created state statute that required parties to accept signature gathering. You did this, the very thing you're discussing or you're complaining about is what the state intervened in these election processes proactively. And so what you're seeing now is saying, whoa, since it has become so prescriptive in state law on these, on how you get on the ballot, because of like things like your favorite Count My Vote.
Love it.
Which you required parties to have to accept signatures. What they're saying is, look, we are going to, the same state and its statutes are going to say, we're going to create some space and some distance between party affiliation because we don't want it to be manipulated. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, look,
any
if you're
bill,
a Democrat and you don't think you can win statewide, I absolutely understand why you want to raid the other party.
I don't even think
about the
outcome. I'm not thinking
but
about
I'm
Republicans
saying,
or Democrats in this.
Just,
I'm thinking
just
about
make
process.
It intellectually honest and have an affiliation process.
Any legislature
that is absent of the the practical realities of an election.
Any legislature that proffers a bill that narrows the path for the citizens to vote is a bad bill.
It doesn't narrow it. It actually makes sure it has integrity.
Oh, because integrity is involved with the brand of a party that has nothing to do with their
vote. I feel like there's no
votes.
Passion no, on either side
I
here.
Know, this
no,
is,
and, we're and, confused.
And
about.
I'm trying so hard to let Mara see the light, and she just
I just want to not
she
have to affiliate either. Journalists are not supposed to be Republicans or Democrats. And here in the great state of Utah, if you want to be involved, you got to put your name on it.
That's why the Republicans closed the system. You know, the Republican system was open for generations. They sort of led the way on this. And we're looking at about 15 years ago, too many of us wanted to be unaffiliated. We maybe wanted to be conservative. We maybe wanted to be driven by our individual opinions and not a party chokehold. And the Republicans didn't like it. So they closed their doors and told us we had to register as Republicans.
Look,
most people in Utah would prefer to be unaffiliated.
Well, then they can. No one's forcing. No one's forcing. But I'm telling you, again, this is an amazing thing.
The system is their princess. Like, you know that, Greg. Don't pretend that the system doesn't force.
No, I'm saying you've got to have a two-party system. We're healthier as a state if we have a two-party system. When all the Democrats migrate into the Republican Party to vote in their primary because they've given up on their Democrat candidate, come on. How is that giving anybody a choice in November if everybody's trying to crowd into one party's election in June? I mean, that's not the process. I mean,
it did not.
Again, so instead of it being the Republicans' fault, how about Democrats get a party? How about you have a candidate
Amen.
that can be competitive
in November?
I believe
that they should be persuasive entities
well,
that
if they're
are
all
going to
affiliate as Republicans, Mara, you're getting further away from the goal. I'm telling you, you're not getting a stronger
Why?
Party.
Why?
All
Why are you so threatened that I might show up and vote for your people?
I'm not. I just want it to be an intellectually honest endeavor. If
it's
you've
politics.
Decided you want to be a Republican,
intellectual honesty
be a Republican. We,
does
we
not
are
exist
big
in
Canada. We just welcome
We should
you
talk
in.
About something
Use
more
words.
Relaxing, like maybe gun rights.
I know.
Let's
so
pivot.
Concealed carry.
Frying pan and into the fire,
I forget
they say.
Who have, first last time. So we've got another bill that we've been talking about this week about
first.
Concealed carry. She did. Are you saying that? I can't even remember. I need a little scorecard here. I let you go first on that one because it was your election that maybe was affected by that. So we'll let Mara go first on this. Should we be
first.
Expanding
you
our rights?
Go. Oh, go ahead, please. I love the retort's better than the
the retort's
proffer.
Better. So concealed carry. We're looking to open the doors there a little more.
Yeah, because we just have a chokehold right now on gun restrictions. So a couple of things. The courts
Freedom.
routinely, including the Supreme Court, has routinely suggested that equivalence of time, place, and manners, some decorum and some background checks and some training does not sit in contrast to the Second Amendment. So let's first say that you can have laws about guns
sure.
and still love the Second Amendment. That's not the litmus test.
I would agree.
Bodies of research show you that if you compare states, which we have, that have lax concealed carry, so we're going to narrow it to concealed carry, the more lax the concealed carry law is, the more likely, compared to a state that has stringent concealed carry, 11 to 15% more violent crimes committed, and 11% more homicides likely, just related to how lax the concealed carry law is. So again, I'm not talking about your feelings about the Second Amendment. I'm talking about the basics of, did you need to get a background? Did you need to show some proficiency with it? And all the data is telling us that the more lax, the more likely it is to have violent crime and homicides. The other thing I'm going to point out...
Are you concealed carry certified in the state of Utah, Mara?
You betcha I am. Clark Apogian helped me get that done several years ago.
Boom.
I asked me if I've ever
Mine
carried.
Expired.
No, I haven't.
Was.
It was an academic that. Exercise for me. I'm not going to pretend like I... Because as a woman, I know that my rate of violent crime goes up if I carry a weapon. Because the deterrent to weapons is shooting them, not holding them. But that's another subject. I'll stay focused on concealed carry. The other thing that we know that's really new research that just came out last week is they did a study in the Intermountain West and they found that our rate of homicide with police officers is higher than another state per capita. So to be clear, per capita, we have a higher in the Intermountain West, not just Utah, we have a higher rate of violence with police. And so they were
so
looking
we're
at
killing more police or police are killing more
police
people?
Are killing more guns are being used more in police altercations.
Okay.
So they looked at factors. This is readily all of us will admit this is a multi-dimension. So I'm not trying to hang this just on guns. But one of the factors that they found that shone through really clearly is the prevalence of guns were one of the two or three determining factors for the increased use of guns in the altercation. It's the same with concealed carry. Concealed carry allows average people to enter into public scenarios. And we know that the more guns, the more likely there is a chance of having guns included in an altercation, which is why if we're going to be a state that has concealed carry, and if we're living in Mar-a-Land, we're not a state that has concealed carry, but we're not living in that land. We're living in Utah. So if we're a state that has concealed carry, the data is telling us that having basic things like background checks and proficiencies of use and awareness on this really has a statistical impact on violence and the use of guns.
So I watched the floor debate on this bill when it came up in the House, and this is a challenge when you hear the word data. In the floor debate, there was data cited that there isn't this statistical difference, that it isn't significant. You have what has always been the case on this issue, where we've passed it before and it's been vetoed by the governor. But you had a lot of apprehension from lawmakers from both parties that were from the Wasatch Front, where it's more populated than in the rural areas. The data that was discussed on the floor debate and why that bill passed in overwhelming numbers this time around was because there is data that would point different than what Mar just cited. And so the challenge there is, you know, there's
so
lies.
It goes
lies, damn lies, and statistics. And so, you know, we just got to sort through those things. I will say this. If we live in a country and a state where open carry is legal, where you can brandish, have a hand cannon on your belt as long as it's open and not concealed, you can get on a tracks train, you can go anywhere you want with it, and it's as legal as the day is long. To say to put a jacket on so that people aren't seeing it or not feeling uncomfortable by it is now going to be the end of the earth when you can open carry at will anywhere in this state. I don't think it stands to reason. I think being able to carry, to have your jacket on instead of open carrying is not going to make us less safe. I don't think that's
the case. That makes no sense, because I will tell you, we all know when we carry our AK-47s on our back, it is an open act of aggression.
You're not
going
to get to cover that anyway.
No,
this bill won't
that,
even help you cover,
the reason
conceal
it's
an AK-47.
The reason it's a deterrent is because you know the dude's a nutter. So, like, I'm just suggesting to you, when you enter a place that has these are weapons. These were built to kill people. That's the point of them.
Most of the fatalities with guns are, sadly, when people turn them, it's suicide. It's not from the violence that you're describing. It's mental health issues.
Not concealed carry. When you want to talk about use of weapons and suicide, disproportionately 80% or so is suicide for sure. But we're talking about open carry and what it takes to decide that you want to carry a deadly weapon on your body at all times. And Greg, that is markedly different.
What do you say about the states and cities that have some of the most strictest gun laws in our country that have the highest homicide rates, bar none?
And you know what? They can track back with data that is infallible. They get them in less prescriptive states. We know in Utah we have a problem.
In other words, you're going to get a gun, right? So if there's 300 million guns in America today.
You're going to come to Utah and get a gun, and then you're going to go on back to California.
Let me tell you what you just said. There are 300 million plus guns in the United States of America.
Yeah,
and those that want to commit harm are going to go get them. Okay, so you can make all the pretty laws you want.
Okay, let me take Greg's
they're
logic
go get them,
stream.
Even if you have the strongest law.
People are
going to
drive drunk anyway, so why the heck are we having drunk
laws
driving laws?
In America don't stop the homicides.
People keep going over the speed limit.
Because they still find the guns.
Why do we have speed limit laws anymore?
I love
you know,
the political
I mean,
you
hear
this?
Come you hear this?
On,
the strictest
Greg.
Gun laws in cities and states still don't prevent the homicides, because people will still find them.
That a room full of Republicans.
You can't snap your fingers and make these guns disappear.
They have me living in a nanny state. I got a driver's license. I got a license to cut hair. I got
driver's
a license,
license
to do
is not
everything.
A constitutional right. There's nothing
and
in the Constitution that protects your right to drive.
I have to fill this out, and you guys are like, oh, concealed carry. Why even fill out a form? I mean, it's a deadly weapon. We do know that more guns result in more results of guns, Greg.
I'm telling you, where you have governments take away their guns, it doesn't get safer out there. It
really
doesn't.
But do you need a license to blow dry someone's hair?
You do. And I'm going to tell you, it's not. If it needs to be a constitutional
hours.
Right. It needs to be a constitutional right to braid hair, because right now you need a have the beautician license or something.
It sounds so dumb to me that you need a license to blow dry hair, but I did get my hair cut this week and I cannot blow dry it like the fine stylist that I had on Monday. So now I'm thinking maybe you do need a license.
And the trouble is, she can't take off her jacket because she's carrying right now. So there's a dilemma.
I know so many rules. I feel like I need you guys to take me shooting or something. I've never concealed carried. I haven't shot a gun.
You haven't?
No.
No, it's
all right. That'll be our next podcast on the road.
We'll do it
on
the range.
You are a city boy. I am not letting you pretend rifle.
I have firearms, Mara. I shoot them all the time.
You bought that state centennial one and then put it in a closet, didn't you?
I did. Remember that story?
I did.
Because when I went to get that gun, I went through ridiculous checks to get that gun from Cabela's. I mean, I ordered it. It was that gun you mentioned, the centennial, whatever it was. Oh my gosh!
Greg,
had to go through to get that thing.
I was
they
the
were
executive director
my last name
of the Utah
my...
State Centennial Commission in 1996.
Well, not
so
centennial.
You are welcome. You're welcome. We
was.
Did customized guns because that's the kind of people we are.
Nice, fancy.
See, Mara, you are a concealed carry, you know, permit holding. Gun
now, let's
making,
be honest. I went
married
through
to a
rebel.
Cop kind of girl.
I went through the concealed carry to show you how BS-y it was.
Oh,
that
please.
Was the point of it.
Please.
The point is they make you take a test, but you don't have to pass
it. Oh, so it doesn't. So we
they
should,
make you sit and
it?
Watch a video.
So
it's
why
like
have
the
it?
Worst maturation film in
you
sixth
just,
grade
I,
ever.
Your Honor,
like,
I rest my case. Mara Carabella has just. Yeah, you're right. So we shouldn't have it.
No,
so we repealed it.
You know me. Let's up it. Let's make it equivalent to becoming a hairdresser. Let's have you 1,600 hours.
It is not
of professional training.
It's not a constitutionally protected liberty.
And as we established, there's nothing wrong with time, place, and manner equivalents and still loving the Second Amendment. You
but
can
you just
authorize.
Got done telling us that all those precautions were worthless. You just
I'm
told
just
us.
Saying we're already too lax. Let's not become more
please.
Lax.
Let's talk about the First Amendment and Sean Reyes, because there are people who would like to see him
These
impeached and an impeachment hearing. Does he have the right as the Attorney General of Utah, or even as someone who takes a day off of being an Attorney General of Utah, to fly to Arizona and make sure that the voting was done properly, securely, safely, and there was no fraud? Or should we investigate him?
Yeah, it's not a house arrest scenario. He has every right in the world to do those things, and he can travel, and he can, as an elected official, he can do all those things. And it's not contrary to his charge as being the Attorney General of the state of Utah. He can do those things.
What
on
about
his
when
time.
He signs his name as like a friend of the court as the AG of Utah? Is that okay?
Now I 100% supported his suit at joining Texas in their lawsuit. I did think that there was a national consequence and to our state if we thought there were problems in the election processes of other states that would impact the outcome for our state. So I supported that from the beginning. I thought that it was absolutely appropriate to be part of that. And so that's different than what some are complaining, that he went to Nevada or he went to some state. That's, you know, he's made it clear he did that on his own time when he worked on those issues, which he can do. What he did on behalf of the state of Utah, joining, I think, I can't remember how many states it was. It was close to 20,
I think
least.
It was about every state that had a Republican
governor.
Sure. He wasn't alone in this. I mean, you have attorney generals from across the country.
That's how bad
that
doing
this.
Works, is where you
so,
alone.
So I'm telling you that I actually
listen,
supported
that.
Listen,
if my friends jump off a bridge into a river, I will.
Yeah.
No
Don't
way,
you?
I'm telling
and you're
you.
Not alone. It's okay.
I'm telling you that it...
You know,
you can absolutely make the case that there were irregularities.
Level? Are we wasting
go.
Our time, Mara?
I'm really sympathetic to those of us who feel like there was a little bait and switch with Sean Reyes from a few years ago where he seemed to be sort of a reasonable, rational person to perhaps slipping down the nut lane there. But so that's my personal point of view, right? I'm sympathetic to that. I don't know if his actions are rising to some legal thresholds, but this is where I want to say to Utahns, you know, if Greg doesn't try and take away your right to vote for Republicans, I just think he should be held accountable, because I absolutely think he is being a little too flourish with his rights to bind the great state of Utah. And I also think he's not representing, and I don't think he's listening. I think this is a personal platform. So I'm a little critical of the attorney general he's turned out to be. I'm not sure if it rises to the occasion so to have it processed.
I feel like if it were probably flipped, I can see where Republicans and Democrats and the Trump and everything were flipped. I feel like Democrats might do the same thing. We're at a political threshold in our country where not A.G. Sean Reyes. It's whoever's on the flip side of what's happening. So I don't know if that makes it right or wrong.
It doesn't. But here's a problem. Impeachment is a... it is a provision that's supposed to preserve the checks and balances, and there are rare, in the United States of America, in only two occasions in American history prior to the election of Donald Trump, had there been an impeachment in the United States House of Representatives, and they were in completely different eras. And then the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi, they literally impeach Trump twice, and I think they have demeaned this, what is supposed to be a rare provision. When you see, and this is happening,
it's supposed to be like the F word, where you use it on special occasions so that people know you're serious.
Well, that's one way to look at it. But I'm telling you that when you have now the Democrats here taking cues from just throwing out an impeachment at a drop of a hat and taking what is, again, something we have to be very, very careful not to politically weaponize. I mean, if we get to that spot, which we've seen nationally, we start doing that here. I just think the cynicism will never go down.
So great.
Everybody will always just start getting into camps. We'll never see a true and honest, you know, administration of constitutional authority if we're just going to start throwing out impeachments all the time. I regret seeing it happen in this case. Yeah. It absolutely does not rise to a level like that. And we got to generally stop throwing this impeachment term or provision, whether it's our U.S. Constitution or our state. We got to settle down and realize
the weight
that that
has. I'm going to let you take that pivot to the federal level just because I know you're still in mourning, and I'm happy about that. Appreciate
you
wearing your black veil.
So give me my space.
So, but when we move back to the state issues, I do think one other element, I think it's worthy of a representative wanting to stand up and saying, as an independent elected, I don't. I think he should lay voice to it. But the other thing I'm concerned about with this is the legislature, and what's unique, you know, we have an independently elected person. I'm not wanting to see this legislative body feel their oats really about restricting another.
So we agree on that.
So we agree.
That's what I would say would be politically weaponizing the impeachment powers. And we have to be, there has to be a reverence to that, that we're losing just in politics nationally.
It is the word everyone wants. Everyone wanted Republicans, Mitt Romney impeached after they decided that he wasn't as Republican as they wanted and whatnot.
Or recalled.
Recalled, yes, but people use the word impeachment too. Yeah. There's a lot of people on Twitter who don't really know the definitions of words because unfortunately they haven't found Google also on the internet. But yes, so there's a lot of people talking about that. Google has found them.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we've spent all of our time talking Utah legislature. We don't get even talk
about
any national issues.
You know what, it's 7 weeks. I mean, it's the time.
I know. I want to ask about vaccinations real quick though before we go. We're getting to the point where we're rolling out a lot more vaccines. They're going quickly. Spencer Cox, though, is saying that the next round we're going to go on the honor system. Is that going to work? Are the humans of Utah going to use that appropriately? Or are we all just, like, not nice people at the heart of it and we care about ourselves the most and we'll just go get in line? Anyone?
You know, more people vaccinated, the better. I hope it works. I doubt it will.
So even if you don't have an underlying condition,
yeah, I'm not encouraging it. I'm saying, hey, listen, why don't we, by protecting our most vulnerable, we protect ourselves, right? And so, and really what's unique about COVID is this death factor to it. And so those who are more likely to have serious, and I know we can't quite tell, so I hope we keep in mind the greater good. But I will say if the result of cheating is that you get vaccinated, we all have to get vaccinated. So that rush to vaccinate,
fine.
It's a crazy time because you have two narratives going on at the same exact time. You have people arguing, should everyone get a vaccination or who would you pick? Who's more equal than another? And I do think there's a strong argument for those that are most vulnerable. And I think that what's happened with this virus, you can see what age group, what comorbidities, you can see clearly where this virus attacks people the most severely, and those ought to be the people without regard. I mean, they should be the ones that get it as quick as possible. But at the same time, we're arguing about who should get this and who should be in line first. There's another argument saying, I don't want it, and I don't want to be forced to take it. And then you hear them say, well, you need to, and you have to take it. You can't argue that I'm not getting it in time or who's getting it first and it's not fair, and we have a big long line over here. And then you have people on the other side that say they don't want it. Well, you're going to have to get it. You see how crazy it is? I mean, these are two, you can't do both. You can't force everybody to get it when you can't decide who should get it. So why don't we just do this? It's intuitive. We know with a year, almost a year into this thing, who's most threatened by it. They should absolutely be getting this vaccination. If they want it, they should be getting it. And there's, because there's I don't think we have enough for everybody to be forced to get it, including those that are
most
vulnerable.
I don't think we're forcing anyone to get it.
Well,
Greg.
the fear is that you'll need to show that before you can get on a plane or before you can go into a bank.
Okay, so you're talking about consequences.
So there's people that are worried about, you know, being forced to at some point to have it.
We have a large portion of the world that already has natural immunity, hopefully, too. And
yes,
looking compared
and so
to the
why
SARS
would they have to
have
it
for like 20 years?
So I think everyone needs to chill out. We need to just know that there's a natural line of those that need and should receive this vaccination as soon as possible and without complaint. And because you have that, it leaves space for those that don't want it. You don't have to harass them. You don't have to tell them that they're terrible people because we couldn't get it to them right now if you wanted to.
And
so
I agree with you.
Everybody chill
like,
out about it.
Solve problem number one.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. That you said it quicker and better. That's
God
it.
Bless America.
Yes, and we landed too, huh?
I know. How fun was it to have Mara here today?
It was. It was
I know.
Good.
Two girls and one Greg.
Yeah, I know. There's just I am getting ganged up on in here, I feel like it, so.
Well. I think you both held your own. Thanks for playing today. Happy weekend, and I'm sure we'll have more things to fight about next week. And agree on too, right?
That's right.
All right.
See you next week.